welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. After the shootings at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs, President Obama again pleaded with the nation to pressure Congress to do something limiting access to the most dangerous guns. He said, "We have to do something about the easy accessibility of weapons of war on our streets to people who have no business wielding them." And after the shootings in San Bernardino, he again pleaded for what he called common sense safety laws, including expanded background checks at gun shows. But a Republican Congress is determined to protect gun rights, and Obama has limited executive powers to act without him. Meanwhile, state and local officials are debating the same issues. What kind of gun safety measures do advocates want to see in New Mexico? And in this rural state with a long history of hunting and with a high violent crime rate, what worries responsible gun owners? Here with me today to talk this over is Miranda Viscoli with New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Good morning, Miranda.
Good morning, Gwyneth. Thank you for having us.
Later on, we will hear from Joel Gay with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, a sportsman's group, and Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, who is working on some proposals in Congress right now to prevent suspected terrorists from buying guns. And State Representative Bill Rehm is a former police officer who follows proposals like this in the state legislature. We'll bring them in just a little bit. Miranda, your group was founded in response to the shootings at Sandy Hook. Who are the major stakeholders in this organization, and how did you come together?
There were two groups that got started. And I have to, lately I've been saying I'm kind of ashamed that, what happened to Sandy Hook was obviously horrific. But we did start because of Sandy Hook. But then when we started researching gun violence and the problem of gun violence and seeing that it was such a civil rights issue as an individual, I was somewhat ashamed that I knew so little about how it was hurting our inner cities in this country. But we were two different groups, and we came together 3 years ago in January. The first bill we went after was to close the gun show loophole, which we continue to try to do. And we've been fighting ever since. We have doctors on our board. We have an ex-police sheriff who is joining us as well. And we just work on legislative policy as well as educational policy to try to stem the tide of gun violence that's coming to define both our state and country.
Just to help the listeners understand, is your position that we should have no guns, that there's not
no,
a place for guns?
Not at all. We're really not an anti-gun organization. What we are about is gun violence prevention. We're not against hunting. We're not against if you're a law-abiding citizen and you want to own a firearm, go for it. We're just trying to make sure that guns don't end up in unsafe hands, and try to make sure that guns get locked up in homes with their children.
Well, we've all heard these stories about guns that were found in a house by a kid, and they love to play with them, of course, because they see them on TV, and they have squirt guns already, and they love it, right? So then something tragic and terrible happens, and you wonder, why don't people lock up their guns? What do you know about why people don't do it?
Well, what we actually have learned a lot from that. We're having a lot of one-on-one conversations. So we do a lot of community events throughout New Mexico where we hand out educational material and free gun locks that the state police give us. And in Santa Fe, our Santa Fe Police Department, they give us, so we can give them to free. And we have a lot of conversations with parents who a lot of times show up to our table saying, "I'm not locking up my gun." And then we start talking to them with our scary statistic list on why you want to lock up your gun. And we've literally had parents leave with tears in their eyes for gun locks saying, "Why wasn't I locking up my gun?" In our state, it's pretty scary because we have, 40%, I think, of our homes, or 36.6% of our homes have firearms. Well, when you combine that with the amount of kids in the Youth Resilience Survey that have a suicide plan or have thought of committing suicide, and you put those together, we have a high suicide rate with children, and a lot of it is because guns are not being locked up.
But wouldn't they try to commit suicide some other way? We also have bathrooms full of pills.
Exactly, and you have a 40% chance of that working. With a gun, you have a 90% chance of that suicide happening and being lethal.
A 90% chance.
90% chance. Oh. And usually a person, especially a teenager, will not, if they try to commit suicide once, they won't attempt to commit suicide again. If there's a gun in that equation, but that 90% chance, you're most likely you're dead.
So these locks that you say, the gun locks that you say you're giving away free and the Santa Fe Police Department is giving away, what does that look like? How does it work?
It's really simple. It's just a little loop, and you have a key, and you undo it, and you put it. I don't know how to explain it with my hands. My hands are explaining it. But you just loop it in so that the it locks the trigger. And these are cheap ones. I mean, we actually recommend a safe. I mean, they have great safes now. If you want to keep your gun armed and loaded to protect your family, there are these safes now. You basically put your fingerprint on the little pad, and you have your gun in 7 seconds.
Well, we have loaded a gun safe at our house, and it is gigantic, and looks like it's from the 1800s. It takes like 5 minutes to open the thing.
Well, you can upgrade.
No way. I don't think we could pay people enough to move that thing back in and out. But so how much success do you have, nationally, groups like yours, in persuading folks to voluntarily lock up their guns, as opposed to what you think you would have if it were a law, if it were required?
Well, it's interesting because we actually this last session went after a child access prevention law. And what that does is says if you're a parent or a gun owner and a child or a teenager gets hold of your gun, hurts him or herself or hurts somebody else with that firearm, you're liable. And what that does is it really gets people to lock up their guns. 27 states already do this, including Texas and Florida. Unfortunately, it was filibustered in committee, so we didn't get what we hoped to continue to push that forward, but we didn't get as far as we'd like. But I think it's a common sense solution. It helps educate gun owners that, you know what, just, you know, we're not taking away your gun, we're just asking you to be safe and lock it up.
And so, you know, I understand why people think that they should have easy access, especially people who are afraid of, you know, someone breaking into their house. We just here in Albuquerque a few weeks ago had an elderly couple who came home to find their stuff being loaded into a van. They went into their house, they got their guns, and they said, hey, stop taking our stuff. And they caught the guy. You know, you hear stories like that, and you can understand how people are like, well, if I lock it up, I'll never use it at the moment when I need it.
Well, I have two responses to that. One, you have a 90% higher chance of that firearm in your home hurting you or somebody else. And second, with these new gun safes, if you really, really want to have that firearm right next to you, to your front door, you literally have 7 seconds to get the gun out and load it. It's already loaded.
Well, let's talk now with Joel Gay with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. Joel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gwenda. Thanks for having me.
Joel, Aldo Leopold helped establish your group about 100 years ago during a time when native herds of elk, deer, antelope, and sheep were in danger from overhunting, and the land was seriously overgrazed by sheep and cattle herds. And today your group works on preserving wildlife habitat and access to public lands for hunters and anglers. One of your priorities is getting kids involved in hunting and fishing. How is it that you try to bring kids into this? Some of it involves teaching them how to use guns?
Absolutely. What Aldo Leopold and those folks did 100 years ago was establish this this tradition where essentially the hunters and anglers of America pay for wildlife conservation and management in America. In New Mexico, it's 100%. In other states, the general fund helps contribute to wildlife management, but hunters and anglers are just a critical part of the whole wildlife management picture and always have been. And one of the things that we've been concerned about over the last 20 years or so is that as our nationwide population gets increasingly urban, we are losing numbers of hunters and anglers. And that's a threat to wildlife management in general, to public land protection sort of more broadly. So, yeah, our group and virtually every other hunting and fishing organization in America is actively trying to promote getting kids into hunting and or fishing. And hunting, this paid off in sort of unexpected ways. As kids go through hunter education, they learn a respect for firearms. They learn safety. They learn safe gun handling techniques. And I think that that's a really good way to go with kids, is to sort of demystify this whole thing, you know, the whole issue of firearms. Because if you're educated in them, then you may not be as curious to handle them, you know, and certainly you would not handle them unsafely. One of the statistics that we've seen is that kids who go through hunter ed have actually a higher safety record in terms of, you know, kids being hurt by firearms. There are fewer kids being hurt by firearms in hunting and fishing, or, you know, hunting activities, than there are kids being hurt in football.
Mm. You know, so, Joel,
anyhow,
you guys also
The short story is just that hunter education works, and it's a really important part of the hunting tradition today in America.
We have a call here from Santa Fe. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I'm just curious about how information fits into this whole situation. As I understand it, we are restricted from even being able to know what information is going on, how many people are hurt, simply because the legislation has been passed to keep that from happening. So I'm curious how that fits into the equation, and how we, these organizations, can work in order to sort of make us safer if we had better information.
Well, Steve, I think you're going to be, you should listen to the whole show, because later on we're going to talk with Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, who is in Washington this week, where Congress has just passed a budget that does still contain a provision that effectively prevents the government from collecting information on gun safety in many ways. And that's a part of, I think, what you're talking about. Miranda?
Well, yeah, I mean, so once again, the Congress has voted to not give any funding to the Center for Disease Control. And the problem with that is that this is a public health epidemic. When you have 92 people a day being killed by a firearm and 270 people a day being injured, that's a public health epidemic. And the fact that the CDC's arms, hands have been tied for so many years because the corporate gun lobby and the NRA continues to convince our politicians that we shouldn't be funding gun violence, any research on gun violence.
Thank you for that. Joel, you guys also do a lot of work in hunter safety, and you encourage your members and others to keep their guns locked up. Is that a problem for most hunters?
You know, I think it's probably a little misleading to talk about most hunters, because hunters, like any other population within our broader population, you know, we are a mixed bag. And so there are a lot of hunters who buy and use gun safes, others who live in rural areas and they want to have, you know, they're just not worried about, you know, a firearm being stolen. You know, it may not be an issue of having quick access to it, but, you know, a gun safe is an expensive proposition, and a lot of people just choose not to use them. So our organization doesn't really get into the issue of gun, stuff like, you know, you should use a gun safe, you should keep your guns locked, that sort of thing. I think most hunters are responsible gun owners, and, you know, speaking for myself, you know, all my rifles, I don't own a handgun, but all my rifles are locked up and with trigger locks and, you know, and broken down into components that can't be used. Even if it was stolen, it wouldn't be usable. So I think we just, you know, we just leave it to our individual members to sort of take care of that for themselves.
Let's take a call from Cal now in Los Alamos. Good morning in Los Alamos.
Good morning, and thanks for running this show on this contentious issue. I had more of a comment. I sent in some questions the other day, which you're free to use or not use, but my comment is that as a gun enthusiast, one of the things that I think I can probably speak for others as well is that it's not that we don't want to have less gun crime and more gun safety, but sometimes the way that laws are written or suggestions are made drives us mad. And I'll use the example of using the no-fly list to keep people from owning guns. Lujan Grisham, representative, has suggested that. Both our senators recently voted for it. The trouble is, it's a secret list. There's almost no due process. And you don't want a situation where the first time you find out you're on the list is when you're surrounded by police at a gun store. The Democrats went after the Republicans for opposing that bill. The American Civil Liberties Union just came out with a statement saying that that list should not be used for this or any other purpose until it's massively reformed because it's virtually unconstitutional. So,
yeah, Cal, that is the argument that I've heard on the other side, which is, you know, most people, I think, in this country really loathe the TSA, right? We most people would agree that what has happened to us in terms of air travel since 9/11 has been awful. And this no-fly list has caught up, you're right, a whole bunch of people who had no business being on it, academics, people who travel frequently out of the country. But I think folks say, fix the list, because we don't have very many other ways of compiling a list of people. And there are some dangerous people on the list now. Get the not dangerous people off the list and then use it. Would that work for you?
It would work for me, but I think we fix the list first and then use it rather than leave it to some poor guy to be stuck at an airport or stuck surrounded by police in a gun store being accused of being a terrorist. It would be a terrible thing to misuse a list, because what that will do is lessen the chance of you getting gun owners like me to trust anything the government does. Fix it first.
If we fix the list, would you be okay with the folks that are on that list not being able to purchase a firearm?
Right. If you fix it and people like the ACLU, of which I'm a member, agree that it's fixed, then I would say use that for the next list, definitely.
And they would not be able to purchase a firearm?
Well, you don't want terrorists having guns. I mean, we just found that out in San Bernardino. The irony is that the people who shot up that that place in California last, was it 2 weeks ago, weren't on any list. We had no idea they were terrorists.
So that's the other thing.
If you expect these lists to be able to solve all the problems, they won't. Well, but they'll solve some problems, and that's good.
Thank you for that, Cal. That's a really good point about the no-fly list. I want to go back to hunters, because this is a really important part of New Mexico culture. And honestly, this is an important issue in my house, too. You know, we have a mixed bag over at my house. But my partner is a hunter, and I like to go with him. And I think there are a lot of people who don't look like hunters, but this is something that's important to them. Joel, part of passing down this heritage and this knowledge also sometimes means passing down an heirloom gun. I know that my partner, for example, has several guns that his dad gave him that he took him hunting with when he was a kid. Hunters often give and buy and sell rifles and shotguns among themselves. Some of the stuff we're talking about is proposals that would further regulate private sales and sales at gun shows, which are different things. How would further regulation of those things affect hunters in New Mexico, do you think?
Well, you will get different reactions to that question from different hunters. A lot of hunters would buy into the argument that Cal just made, that they don't want to see anything that restricts or, you know, tracks any sales. Personally, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I've bought guns at firearm shops, and had to go through the background check. It's not onerous. It's just part of life in America to me. It would probably be seen as a burden for a lot of people if they had to, for instance, fill out paperwork and get a background check if they wanted, if a grandfather wanted to give his granddaughter a 22.
Right.
That would seem to be over the top.
Well, Miranda,
I don't know how to thread that needle.
Miranda, what are you guys looking at in terms of further regulating gun shows and or private sales?
I mean, I would love to see a universal background check. And I think it's, what are we at now? 73% of gun owners would like to see a universal background check. And yes, it can be a pain. You have to go in and get the background check. But, if that saves one life, two lives, is it worth it? I understand with the private sales, but right now you can go online and buy almost any gun you want on arms list. I mean, it's the Craigslist of firearm sales, and we've got to start having background checks for those sales.
Yeah, I guess that's not really what we think of when we're talking to Joel here about, you know, some folks in a small community in New Mexico upgrading to a new deer hunting rifle and then, you know, selling the other one to their neighbor.
I think they should go through the background check. I really do. Because you might not know your neighbor that well. You might think you know your neighbor,
so
but you might not know your neighbor.
How would that
well.
Work? Would it be like you'd have to go down to a DMV type place and do a thing? Or, I mean, who does that paperwork? How does that actually happen?
You just have to go to a federal firearms licensee. So probably if you could go to, they'd have to work that out. So if you were going to a gun shop, they could do it, or the police station, or, you know.
So we'd ask gun shops to participate in sales. They don't get any profit.
Yeah, and I don't know for certain how that works.
Let me break in here. I just sold a shotgun to a guy in Missouri, I think, and it was essentially an online sale. I advertised it, and this guy bought it, and we worked out a payment thing. And what I had to do was ship it to what they call an FFL, a Federal Firearms License. I believe that's what FFL stands for. Holder, and so I had to ship it, and when I shipped it, I had to tell the post office that it was a long gun, and had to give the FFL name and address. It went to those guys, and then they charged, the guy who bought my shotgun, $30 or $50, something like that, to do the background check on him before they would release the shotgun to him.
Huh.
So, I know that there are, I'm guessing that there are a lot of loopholes and really that's, I think, what the gun show provision is aimed at getting your that's the problem with the gun show loophole, is that people don't go through those background checks. But, it was a $30 or $50 charge, something like that, added a couple of days of hassle. It did seem onerous to me, and it didn't seem onerous to this guy who bought my shotgun. If a guy needed to get out for duck hunting season opening day and just waited too long and had to, miss opening day, that was just bad timing on his part. So,
well, that's a big deal, Joel, missing opening day.
I think ahead. I think that's on my calendar. If I needed a new gun, I'd make sure I had it way ahead of time.
But let's take a quick break here. We would like to hear from you listeners today, too. What do you think we should do to protect ourselves from gun violence? What worries you about the reforms to gun laws that you hear about in the news and that we've been talking about today? Call us now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for holiday parties and family gatherings. EdibleArrangements.com. Edible Arrangements supports KUNM.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Not until they realize the fragility of lives being taken from a bottle of beer and wine, a few seconds to leave behind while they wait for an entire time to speculate what they've done. And here is the families from the sons and daughters they stole cry. They're lost in their minds of what's wrong and what's right, and they're filled with excitement, still innocent inside. When they walk through a door, promising a night that will be something to remember, not the one to end their lives or label out DWI.
Listen to Youth Media Project's Audio Revolution this Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan, and we are talking about proposals to prevent gun violence. With us in the studio is Miranda Viscoli from New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. And with us on the phone is Joel Gay with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, a 100-year-old sportsman's group here in New Mexico. Joel, while we have you on the phone, I just wanted to ask you one more thing. You know, we hear a lot about restrictions on semi-automatic guns. Most hunters use something that is a pretty old-fashioned looking for things like deer hunting, like a single bolt, single action bolt rifle where you put one big bullet in, you move it forward, and then when you've shot, you have to pull it back and reload by hand and everything. So that's not really an issue for that, but semi-automatic shotguns are a big part of things like duck hunting. Is it possible to separate the kind of semiotic shotguns that allow you to, you know, bring home more ducks from those that are not used for hunting? I mean, are they the same things? Are they different things?
Well, yeah, I think you're getting to a very good point, Gwyneth, and that's that as the gun debate continues in America, it's really important for everybody to understand all the details. Because, as they say, the devil's in the details. So, when people talk about, you know, we need to ban semi-automatic weapons, they're talking about a whole range of, you know, there's a lot of handguns, not all, but some handguns are semi-automatic. And then these assault rifle-type weapons are semi-automatic. And as is my shotgun and the shotgun of a lot of people who hunt ducks and quail and turkeys and everything else.
So that's something we have to keep in mind when we're talking about that. Miranda, are you guys looking at restrictions on semi-automatic weapons, or are you not doing that right now?
We're not. No, that was actually a mistake in the New Mexican that we were going after an assault weapons ban. But I do support an assault weapons ban by far. I mean, I don't think we need 15 or more, you know, magazine clips that are, you know, can spray a bunch of people. I mean, at some point, you know, where can we find some common ground on it? You know, I mean,
I think I hear you saying you would support an assault weapons ban that would specifically exclude the kinds of guns that Joel is talking about.
Yes, that would. I mean, so if we could, I mean, because I love hunters. I mean, they, for the most part, they're so responsible with their firearms. And, you know, we have so many conversations with them. We're actually very, you know, very close to being on the same page. So I would love to sit down sometime with you, Joel, and talk about, you know, what would you as hunters feel was fair? And, you know, I mean, do we need the M2010 that's out right now that shoots, you know, what, 3,967 feet away? Do we need that on the market?
Well, Joel, I'm not going to make you answer that.
Come on, Joel, answer it.
We really appreciate you talking to us, Joel, about the importance of hunting in New Mexico and the concerns of hunters when it comes to gun control. Thank you so much for being with us.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
On the phone now, we have Dixie, who is visiting New Mexico in Santa Fe. Welcome to the show, Dixie. Do we have you, Dixie? Good morning. No, I think we lost her. Okay. We also have on the phone Romeo in Albuquerque. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Great show so far. Enjoying what I'm hearing. Interesting topic. I think part of the reason we're having such grave issues with gun control is because it's viewed as a right. You know, people think that they have the right to protect themselves from threats and also the government, God forbid. And so that's why it's a right. But I think if you really want to control it, you just change it from a right to a privilege, like they do with driving. It's not, you don't have the right to drive your car on the highways and byways. It's a privilege. And if you mess up, those privileges all get revoked, and then you have to have an administrative hearing to get them back. So I'm thinking that if they can set up a similar system that we have for driving, which seems to be pretty much the same state to state, I think that might be a good first step if, you know, the objective is to really curtail these mass shootings and make sure guns only are in the hands of people that are legally able to possess them. But then again, regulations never stop the criminal from grabbing a gun, getting his hands on a gun or her hands.
Thank you so much for that perspective. Miranda, I think I've never heard of that idea before, but in my head, when I'm listening to it, I'm thinking that is politically impossible, but philosophically interesting.
Philosophically, it's fantastic.
We also have Carlos on the phone in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Carlos. Carlos, good morning. Well, we seem to have some, we lost Carlos. But let me go back to you, Miranda. You say you want to close the gun show loophole, which allows people to buy guns at shows without being subject to a background check. I know I went to one of these at the fairgrounds a few years ago with some friends who were looking, you know, at hunting rifles and stuff like that. And it was interesting. A lot of, you know, I looked at a table that had some little Derringers. They were really cute. I thought, ooh, those are adorable. And then I thought, oh, that's the worst idea I ever heard. You know, there's a thing that's going to shoot me in the thigh through my purse. But you know, what are you trying to do with gun shows here?
So basically, if you go to a gun show, when I went to one of the state fairgrounds in Albuquerque a couple of years ago, I was amazed to see how many private purchasers there were, and you don't have to go through a background check. So we'd like to see is simply close that loophole. So every single firearm that's purchased at a gun show, the person goes through a background check.
And practically speaking, there would be like one booth
that's already set up. So you already have. So a lot of the folks that are selling firearms already have to conduct the background check because they're firearm federal licensees. So that's already set up.
So
at the
even if they sell a gun at a gun show, they still have to do the background check?
Yeah, exactly.
But if you or I set up a booth, we wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that is weird.
So that's really weird. And so what we keep getting back is, well, no, it infringes on my Second Amendment rights. You're thinking, no, it doesn't if you're a law-abiding citizen. Why are we protecting the Second Amendment rights of a convicted felon, a domestic violence offender, and people who have no business purchasing a firearm?
Yeah, that's interesting. Looks like we got Dixie back on the phone from Santa Fe. Dixie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What do you want to share with us today?
Okay, my question is to Miranda. As we seek to prevent gun violence, I hear many people use the Second Amendment to stop any limitation to any kind of gun. How would you describe the meaning of the Second Amendment?
I think the Second Amendment argument is beyond frustrating. I mean, basically what happens is every time we try to talk about some common sense gun violence prevention laws, what we get is, no, it goes against my Second Amendment rights. And it's a pretty extreme interpretation of the Second Amendment. I don't think that our founding fathers would have ever been okay with the fact that 92 people a day in our country are being killed by a firearm.
Well, you know, I teach journalism here at the university, and I teach a big old lesson about why they gave special protections in for the press. And the way that I teach it is by saying they were really paranoid people. The founders of our country were very paranoid. They were afraid of tyranny. They were afraid of having too much power. And I think you can see that those values throughout the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. But it says a well-regulated militia. I don't put Adam Lanza in the category of somebody who's in a well-regulated militia.
And, you know, I've done a lot of interviews on this subject as we've been talking about the militarization of police. And there are a lot of folks out there who, you know, have big objections to the way our police force works based on the interpretation of that well-regulated militia provision. I think it's hard to go back and look now and say, what would they think of us here? I mean, that's...
Well, let's look at this. Let's look what the Supreme Court did 2 weeks ago with Highland Park in Illinois, where the Illinois Rifle Association put up a petition saying, hey, these guys want to ban assault weapons, or they have, and we say that goes against their Second Amendment rights. Well, this very same Supreme Court came back and said, you know what? If this makes them feel safer with mass shootings, then we are not going to listen to that petition. I mean, so you are seeing the bit of a tide turning with the Supreme Court in terms of, maybe we did go a little bit too far when it comes to, you know, the Second Amendment and saying that this was never to be any arm anywhere you want. I don't think people walking around with AR-15s loaded walking down our street is a Second Amendment right.
Well, I think you would hear those people say that, you know, they have every right to feel threatened by a government that has gotten so big and so powerful that they're reading our emails and listening to our phone calls. And, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh, no,
I see your face. But
I love it.
You know, there are a lot of people who have legitimate fears of the government, and they do feel that they need to be prepared to push back on a government that overreaches its boundaries. And I mean, we have the most powerful military, the most powerful police forces in the entire world, it's easy to, you know, see how people would feel like they have absolutely no way to protect themselves.
Okay, well, my response to that, though, is that this insurrectionist idea that if the folks that are armed and loaded decide when and where they want to take over the government is extremely anti-democratic. And it's not what our country is founded on. And do you want these people who are armed and loaded taking over our government?
Well, let's go to the phones and see what they have to say. Bill in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Well, thank you very much. My question is, why is it that some people commit violent crimes and other people do not commit violent crimes?
My goodness, Bill, I wish I had the answer to that question. Well, Miranda?
Actually, what Bill's bringing up a really, really good point in terms of gun violence prevention laws. And one thing we really need to look at are the risk factors of dangerousness. If somebody has a history of violence, if they have a history of domestic violence, if they have drug and alcohol abuse problems, they are at a much higher risk factor of hurting somebody with a firearm. And so I think that's something we could all get behind to say, hey, what are these risk factors of dangerousness? And how can we then implement gun violence prevention laws that would prevent people who are in those groups from possessing a firearm?
We've been talking a lot about mental illness as being a risk factor. And I know I've been having a conversation on my Facebook page about this. And one of the folks on my page said, you know, we need to keep people with mental illness from having access to guns.
Well, that's a public myth that our group constantly tries to demystify. The people who are suffering from mental illness have a much less chance of hurting somebody. It's a 4% chance. They have a much higher chance of hurting themselves. But the NRA would love it if we started thinking, oh, let's go after, you know, those suffering from mental illness, because then we're not actually looking at the problem.
Well, plus you look at the number of Americans who take antidepressants and it's pretty much everybody. So, like, how do you determine who has a mental illness and who's just taking Prozac? You know, like, I mean, this is a pretty tough. Who has sought counseling, marriage counseling or therapy? Who has, I mean, this is a really hard thing to parse. One of the things that you've been talking about, Miranda, is a gun violence restraining order.
Yeah, I actually really, really like this idea. And it's about to go into effect in California. And basically what it would do is nothing ever goes on the person's record. So if you have somebody in your home who is acting suicidal or drinking too much or, you know, just their behavior's changing and changing radically, you can actually go to the courts and get a temporary removal of that firearm. And it never goes on the person's record. And what it does is it saves their life and could save the life of one of their family members. Excuse me. Something else we'd like to see is if you have two or more violent misdemeanors, you have a very high chance of actually hurting somebody if you have a firearm. And so what we...
What's a violent misdemeanor?
Oh, so let's say you get in a bar fight. Let's say you, you know, punch a police officer. Let's say you, you know, beat up your wife, your intimate partner. Then that's showing a history of violence. So you probably shouldn't have a firearm until you kind of clean up your act. And it doesn't have to be forever.
So who decides that?
So that will, if you have been convicted of two or more violent misdemeanors, we would have a law that would go into effect that says you don't get a firearm for 2 years or 5 years or you know, whatever the state decides.
Folks, we want to hear from you. We want to know what kind of issues, what kind of measures you would like to see to bring down the level of gun violence in this country. What about those proposals gives you anxiety? We talked to earlier in the show a representative of a hunters group who, you know, showed us some of the things that would concern them. We've talked to some folks who are concerned about the power of the government to overstep, much the way the founding fathers probably were paranoid about that. Call us now and tell us what you think. We are here in the station at 277-5866. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Has another public radio driveway moment made you late for dinner? Download KUNM's new mobile app and take KUNM with you. You can live stream us, listen to stuff you missed on our two-week archive, even send us a picture. Search KUNM in the Apple App Store or Google Play.
It's not too late to donate that old vehicle to KUNM and get a tax deduction for 2015. If you itemize deductions, you claim the deduction in the year you sign over the title. So call today while there's still time to arrange for the tow truck. Donated cars and trucks qualify for a substantial tax deduction, whether running or not, as long as they have an engine. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we are talking about proposals to reduce gun violence. On the phone in Albuquerque, we have Russell. Russell, welcome to the show. What can we talk with you about this morning?
Hello. The Militia Acts of 1792 required that every white man own a rifle or musket and ammunition and show up twice a year to train with the state militia. The real purpose of the Second Amendment was to prevent the federal government from disbanding state militias. I recommend that we revive the Militia Act, require all gun owners to belong to a state militia, require the states to regulate them well. At least the next time a patriot shoots up a school or a shopping mall, we'll know which state's militia was responsible.
So, Russell, you know, my partner gave me a duck hunting shotgun this year. So would you take me in your militia?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure. I feel real comfortable with that. I feel very comfortable shooting a duck. I'm not sure I feel comfortable barging into an elementary school where someone has got an AR-15 and is killing people.
No. You misunderstand. You'd be in the state militia that would protect the state from foreign invaders, not be a police person.
Oh, good, because I'm not that worried about foreign invaders.
No. When ISIS conquers Mexico and begins marching over the border, you would be mobilized to go down to the Rio Grande and keep them from crossing.
Okay, I think you give me a call when that happens. Russell, thank you for that. We have on the phone now Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham. Welcome to the show, Congresswoman.
Oh, thanks, Gwyneth. I'm sorry I'm calling in a bit late, and thank you for having the program and inviting me to call in.
Well, we know you're busy in Congress, so we appreciate your time.
I'm actually voting, so if I slip out,
okay.
It's a time for me to cast another vote. So
well,
I just want to alert you to that.
We only have a couple minutes here, but I wanted to ask you, the budget bill that was just passed does still contain a provision banning government research on gun violence. Is that something that you think, I know you don't support that, is that something that you think you have a reasonable chance of ever changing?
We have to believe that we have a reasonable chance. I mean, we've got a Republican, Representative King, who's got a background check bill that the Gun Violence Prevention Task Force, which I'm a member, you know, we've all signed on. It's got more than 80 co-sponsors. We're working really hard to get a hearing on that. And it includes the provision that we allow the Centers for Disease Control to treat this as the epidemic it is, gun violence, and to study it so that you've got a public health and an evidence-based response. I'm really disappointed. I think the White House is disappointed that that's not in the omnibus bill that we're working on and the White House hopes to have out this week. And I think it's got many productive provisions for
Representative,
the Mexico's economy, but that is not among them. And I'm very disappointed we couldn't get it in.
If the CDC were allowed to study this and they had some data, what would you do with it?
Well, you could do any number of things. First, you would have evidence-based data to say, look, these prevention initiatives would work. These training protocols will have an impact on reducing gun violence. States can engage and provide funding to law enforcement. The Department of Justice could do their work for redo their training protocols and their investments and their grants. We would know unequivocally about how mental health investments work. And right now we just debate all that, right? You've got groups who don't want anything to be changed in our society's current gun laws, including background checks. And their statements are, well, there's no evidence to say that any of this would, it wouldn't deal with this mass shooting or that mass shooting. And so we just sort of stall out here. It would really give folks, an advocate such as myself, the opportunity to say these things work. It would be provided to every citizen who would then know about these kinds of ideas, and we could begin to invest them and mandate that we make these differences like we have in every other public health arena.
Representative, we were talking earlier about the proposal to use the no-fly list and prevent those people from buying guns, but we heard from some of our listeners that the no-fly list isn't really a particularly good list, and they're worried that it will prevent non-dangerous, law-abiding citizens from buying guns. Is there a way to fix that list before you use it?
There absolutely is. And while I might disagree in a blanket context, the list is good. I'm getting more and more. In fact, I'm going to have a hearing today about our screening processes and Homeland Security and each of the different entities' lists who are screening data and working to keep Americans safe. And we can do better. There's no question about that. And part of that better is, one, we got to make sure that people who are real threats, who belong in that list, are on it. People who do not belong don't get on. But if by mistake somehow they are, that there is a effective, quick, and I don't mean quick by being not thorough, but you got to be able to get off that list. And so we've had a lot of discussions about that. I can see bipartisan support that we should do a better job in that regard. So, yes, I think there's a way to fix that so that when you say, look, anybody on a no-fly list cannot have a firearm, we're clear that that no-fly list is serious offenders who pose a real threat to safety to citizens and Americans. And I believe unequivocally we can get that done.
You recently held a roundtable discussion on gun violence. Did you get input from law enforcement and hunters and other responsible gun owners during that roundtable or before or after it?
Absolutely. They were part of that roundtable because it's really we're never going to move forward if we create the sense by anyone that we're one-sided on these issues. These are very serious issues, and they require serious attention. And if we're to say, if it looks that you're, it looks like you're going to restrict Second Amendment rights for individuals who are doing outdoor activities and sportsmanlike activities, then you are interfering with those citizens' rights. And it just sort of continues, I think, too narrow a debate. You got to have their input. And I totally support and want to enforce the constitutional right to protect those activities. And the same thing about law enforcement. So when you talk about automatic weapons, I want to make sure that when we talk about what we can do prospectively to not have those available, I think that that enhances law enforcement's safety. And I want to talk to them about what those restrictions and limitations should look like, how they get trained and engaged on mental health issues, what they need to do to make sure that they have access to the equipment that they need, that they have access to training, and what we can do about gun training to responsible gun owners that also keeps those families and then first responders protected. So they have to be part of the solution. And they were very effective in our roundtable discussion that we held a couple weeks ago.
Representative, we just have a couple more minutes, but I want to take a call while you are here with us. We have Cal on the phone. Cal called earlier, and he's calling back. Welcome back, Cal. Are you still with us, Cal? Okay. Well, let me ask you this last thing. You know, President Obama recently has said he wants to try and find things he can do with executive action to prevent gun violence. But, you know, we've all been watching this and it doesn't seem like he'll find very much there. Are there any proposals, aside from using the no-fly list, coming through Congress now that you think are going to pass?
Well, that's a tough question in terms of I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you that Congress is going to come to its senses pass any number of pieces of legislation that would reduce violence in general in this country and be meaningful. Because I think people have the right to feel safe in their communities and schools, and I certainly am invested and engaged in that aspect of the policymaking. But there are key pieces of legislation that are garnering incredible support. In fact, I said 84. I meant 184 co-sponsors. It's a very bipartisan bill by Representative King from New York, and it's the Public Safety and Second Amendment Rights Protection Act. And it enhances the NICS, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, because that is also a bit flawed, because as states or local law enforcement bodies have had reduced budgets and shifts in their leadership, we haven't kept up with making sure that that is a complete database. It expands background checks so that we can deal with commercial sales and sales at gun shows and the internet, all the loopholes that, you know, it actually reduces red tape for vetted individuals for purchases of firearms and veterans. And then again, it does the study on mass violence to determine those causes. But there's a couple others. There's the
representative
is also leading a bill.
I want to hear about them, but we're running out of time. We have some information about some of the proposals you're looking at, and we will post them on our website. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to call us this morning.
I'm going to thank you for hosting. Sorry to get through all the legislation. How about this? There is growing bipartisan support, and let's hope that in 2016 that local policymakers, states, and our federal policymakers come together to make a difference here.
Thank you so much, Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham. Miranda, I want to ask you, you know, we just were looking at what might be happening in Congress now. We have a Republican Congress, a Democratic president. Here in New Mexico, we have a Democratic Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican governor. It's a similar situation of divided government. What are you trying to get done legislatively in 2016, if anything?
Well, 2016 is mostly budget. So what we'd like to do is to see if we can call, get a message about closing the gun show loophole. But something that the congresswoman mentioned I think is really, really important. And as we have got to fix the NICS system, and in our state is pretty broken. And if we could at least get our NICS, our background check system, to mirror the federals and have it a state-run background check system, it would make our police officers' lives so much easier because they could then access those names that should be on the background checklist.
Miranda, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today. We have posted links to the information we discussed today, so look for them at KUNM.org. If you missed any of the program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. If you wanted to share something with us today but you couldn't get through on the phones, you can email comments to callinshow@KUNM.org. You can continue this conversation on Facebook. Just look for us, KUNM Radio, or you can talk to us on Twitter. Find us at KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Allison Kidon and Anna Landy screened your calls, Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.